You should have said something like, this is like advanced topics in System Center. That probably would have scared them more. It's probably developers and...
Hopefully. We got developers in the room? You folks, IT admins or IT pros? Two in the back. Get them.
who's built in the new app model so far?
So this awesome. Is all brand new?
Cool.
Very good.
Who's built old Office apps, like the old VSTO? Awesome.
Oh, a few folks.
Cool.
We'll disappoint a few of you.
Who traveled the furthest to be here? Who thinks they've traveled the furthest? No one? Everyone's
Belgium?
From Spain? Belgium? Iceland. That might be hard to beat.
Yeah.
Anyone can beat Iceland? No? You win a prize. Come see me later.
We do have a prize. We have what I got in my pocket. We have €5. No, kidding. We have a cool Ignite USB 4-gig stick. My personal one. Because you traveled the furthest. That's the rest of our door prizes.
Did you take off all that data?
I did take off
government
all
the data?
Snowden data.
Okay, good. Israel used to work in U.S. government consulting, so.
Yeah. All right. And there's still a bunch of empty seats. We don't present to empty rooms. So if you can call your friends and have them fill in, we'd appreciate it. How much time we got?
5 minutes. No.
Oh, we have a Mac.
He's in the right place.
He's got a Mac.
I like this Israel a lot more than last time.
This is cool. Last Israel was bad.
Give out water. Anyone a SharePoint developer out there? SharePoint developers? Cool. Got some stuff for you here. Got about 2 minutes. If you're in here and you're not really here to see developing apps for Office, this is your 2 minute warning to run for the doors. Then you're stuck with us. I've instructed the young lady outside to lock the doors and
you will not get out for 75 minutes.
That's right.
Yeah, watch that.
Yeah. That's dangerous.
Anyone go to the foundational session this morning that was more kind of general apps, the new app model? Anyone? A couple people? Okay.
Good. And you still want to learn about apps? That's good.
You want the clicker?
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Get the laser. Start shining it in these eyes. All right. All right, here we go. Lock the doors. Welcome, everyone. This is day one, right? Still day one of Tech Ed. We're here to talk about apps for Office. And we took a quick poll in the audience to see who has built apps for Office or who knows about apps for Office. We'll kind of do it again because the room filled in with some more folks. How many have built or have seen apps for Office before? A few folks. And I know we have kind of a mixed audience between devs and IT pros. We'll try to mix the content up. What we're going to try to do with this 0 to 60 session is try to get you as up to speed as possible on everything you need to understand the new app model, build on the new app model, what it takes to get started from a development standpoint. We'll talk a little bit about the deployment standpoint for the IT pros, see some of the new features that have been added to the Office 365 tenancy, and we'll talk a little bit about on-prem SharePoint environments as well. My name is Israel Vega, and with me on stage is Richard DeZerga. And Richard's been building apps for about probably a year now. I've been building apps for about probably 10 minutes now. I'm kidding. I do know a little bit more than 10 minutes of apps. Session objectives, we want to make sure that when you walk out of the room, you understand what it takes to build an app, what it takes to get started, a little bit about the object model and how easy it is and how excited you're going to be about apps. We'll also talk about the different patterns and practices for building applications. We have some pretty good demos throughout the talk of a lot of different apps. So I've got a Word app that we'll show you, kind of a very simple one. We have some apps that we integrate with some external services. And then Rich is going to talk about kind of the Uber app application, which pulls a lot of information together from a lot of different places.
So we thought kind of the best place to start would be to show you a really nice end-in example that shows, really highlights all the different types of apps. And we'll dig into each one of those types of apps, but this is hopefully a good overview of some of those apps. So I happen to be, you know, I'm from the States, and my boss is here with me this week. And one of the things that I got this morning was an email from him talking about meeting up and maybe grabbing some good sangria. So you can see here's an email message from my boss. And if I were to zoom in on this, a few things that you'll see. So first of all, we call this the app bar up here at the top inside of Outlook. And what this is, it's a contextual place where different mail apps, and we'll talk about mail apps later, but what this is there's some triggers behind the scenes, some rules that fired that said these apps are relevant to this email message that I have in my inbox. And so if I had no relevant apps, that bar wouldn't show up at all. But what this does is gives me the ability to jump into some contextual things. So if I click on Bing Maps, What it does is you can see down at the bottom, it's highlighting an address. So this is what we call a known type within Outlook or Exchange. It actually found an address, not our app, but Exchange did, and it allows us to pull up an app that's specific to an address. So it shows me where my boss is staying. The other thing that it does is it picked up on something in the message that says, I think this person wants to have a meeting with you. So you can see that it highlights here the suggested meeting, and it gives me the ability to quickly go and maybe schedule a meeting with him. So both of these happen to be out-of-the-box apps that we ship with Office 365. There's a number of different mail apps that you can go get in the store, and there's some apps you can build yourself. One of the interesting things is I think every organization in the world could benefit from a mail app that's specific to their organization. We'll show you how to build those. The other cool thing is I'm in Outlook right now, but if I wanted to jump over to OWA, the same apps work inside the browser, and we'll talk about the technologies that are allowing us to do that, but you can see the exact same apps work here. So my boss wants to grab, you know, sync up and maybe grab some good sangria while we're here. So what I'm going to do is jump over, and I built a quick little app that allows me to search for restaurants around the Madrid area. I'm new to this area, so this helps me find some. So I'm going to go and launch this here inside of Visual Studio. And you can see here's my task pane app. So this is my app area over here. And I have the ability to go and maybe do some lookup. So I'll look for sangria. Now this is going to go off and do a search. And you might say, well, big deal. So you got something sitting beside your Excel document. Doesn't seem like there's a lot of connectivity between Excel and that app. Well, I have the ability to do that. So one of the things you can see here is I have a button that says import the raw data. So in this case, what I'm going to do is take all that data that I got from some service that provided me information about restaurants, and it's going to allow me to bring that into Excel. Now, at this point, I can use any of the things that Excel gives me to work with that data. It's actually created a table in Excel that I can work with. So I can actually discard my task pane app here and continue to work. So I might want to do things like maybe chart by the average rating, or maybe I want to use another app here. So I'll go over here and say, insert a new app. So here's where I have the ability to insert additional apps I might have. And I'm going to insert a Bing Maps app. So we saw Bing Maps in the browser, and it showed where my boss was staying. Now what I can do is go and maybe map all these restaurants and try to find one that's close to him. So you can see here that it's gone out and mapped those different locations, and I can zoom in and click on different things and find out information. And again, this works in the browser. If I were to go and upload this Excel into a SharePoint site that has Excel services, all of this is going to stay and be interactive within the browser. So hopefully this illustrates some of the different types of apps. We're going to jump into each one of those at different points, but we wanted to give you kind of an end-to-end look at how these apps might be used in a specific scenario. All right, so let's talk a little bit about app basics. So why did we go to this new app model? So I thought this picture was very fitting for the old way of building apps for Office, because when you built apps, although there were some, I guess, graceful ways of deploying those apps with Click Once technology, you were still installing binaries on that client machine. Hopefully a lot of you know that we're now offering Office as a service. So it's part of Office 365, and that's kind of the way we're encouraging people to buy it, even from like a personal standpoint, buying Office 365 Home Edition so that you can actually have it as a service. One of the premises of that is we will keep you up to date constantly. So instead of these long 3-year cycles for releasing a new version of Office, we'll incrementally add new capabilities along the way, and you will be able to constantly stay updated. Well, the problem with the old way of building apps was, if I built something that had rich, like really tight hook-ins to Office, it might stop me from being able to upgrade. Has anyone had that in your organization, had some sort of Excel add-in that kept you guys from upgrading? Show of hands? Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So that's the exact reason we're going to this app model. So we wanted it to be something that was much more lightweight. We wanted it to be really a pervasive experience across the browser, the phone, the desktop, as you guys saw in some of the demos that I did just a moment ago. We also wanted to cater to less of a specialized skill set. For those guys that raised your hand when I asked about VSTO developers who's done Office add-ins, it's kind of a minority group in the developer community. It's kind of a specialized skill. You need to know very specific things. And what you'll see is the new app model caters to the huge community of web developers. In fact, not just Microsoft web developers. If you're a PHP developer, fantastic. You can build apps for Office. If you're a Ruby on Rails guy, fantastic. You're good to go. So this is what the new app model looks like. Instead of installing binaries onto a client machine, the only thing that the client gets is a little XML file that describes the app. It basically gives Office the starting address for where the app is, because the app is just web content. So I mentioned earlier that it's catering to the web developers. Ultimately, when you saw me bring up apps, it was just an iframe out to some web page. And now we offer a lot of rich connectivity between that iframe and Office through something that we call the Web Extensibility Framework. And it's a set of JavaScript libraries that we can connect between the two. So if I want to write data to the Word document or pull data back out, we can do all those things with this new app model. So again, this is catering to the mass of web developers out there. In fact, I've seen developers that already have web pages built, and being able to convert that into an Office app, it's something that we can do very, very quickly with this model.
So what are the different types of apps that we can build? So Richard showed you a task pane app. Richard showed you a mail app. And we didn't show you a content app, but we got an example of a content app pretty soon. The first one there, we're going to break down these things into really two big buckets. The first bucket is what we call a document-centric app, things that you can do with a document. The other one is a mail app. Those are the two kind of large buckets. The document-centric app breaks down into two smaller buckets, apps that are on the side of my document and apps that are embedded with my document. We'll walk you through some examples of those as well. The first one there is an app that's on the side. It's a task pane app. Here in this case, we're showing an example of something that shows up in Word. We're highlighting and then going and creating a dictionary call, going out to an external service, pulling that data in. We'll show you the guts of what an app like that might look like and how you might build that. You'll be very surprised at how simple it is to actually build one of these types of apps and one of these task pane apps. The next type of app is a content app. A content app is going to interact with your document. It's going to live with your document. If anyone's done any type of development with VSTO, you'll know that when you get sent one of those types of documents, if you don't have the add-in, your application doesn't work the same. One of the interesting things about a content app is if I embed that into my document, in our case, we're doing it in Excel, which is what's supported right now for content apps, I can take that Excel document and send it to my friend. If my friend doesn't have that content app, what will happen is a little screenshot will show up, and it'll also give them a place to download that app. So my application's not broken, my data's not broken, but I'm still giving the other person an opportunity to actually look at that data and interact with it the same way I'm interacting with it. That's a content app. And the last one here is a mail-centric app, which is specifically for emails. Now, we'll talk about what the guts are inside of a mail application, but in general, we have some things that we're going to target off of. We have some activation rules, and I'll show you what those look like. And we also have different places where we can interact with a mail application. One of them is the inbox. We also can interact with calendar items. So those are some places within the mailbox that we can interact with. Across these different experiences, there are some things that you just have to be aware of as you're developing these and as you're administering these. When we're looking at task pane apps are supported in those clients, Project, PowerPoint, Word, and Excel. When we look at the Office web application or what's available in the browser, there right now, if you have a task pane application, that task pane app will be visible in Excel. For content apps or things that are embedded with the document, Excel right now is supported. But what's interesting about content apps is not only do I have the ability to surface that content on my rich client, but I can also surface that exact same content app in the browser. So for folks that don't have Office installed, they can go ahead and still interact with that document. The last one there are mail apps. Obviously, mail apps are going to work with Outlook, but the experience there is going to be real seamless across the rich client and across the thin client, which is the Office web applications.
So one of the things when I first learned about the new app model that concerned me is that I'm kind of a UX guy, and I had concerns over the fact that we're moving into this world of iframes. I remember 10 years ago, iframes were kind of they're class citizen in the world of web development, and it's certainly changed a lot. And so the idea behind the iframe is we can provide a certain amount of, I guess, isolation so that the app can't do things we don't want it to. We own that iframe, Office does, and so it can really have control over it. But one of the things I was concerned about is, well, everything's going to look different, right? It's not going to really look like it's a part of Word. And so there's a few UX guidelines that I wanted to talk about here really quickly. So first of all, we do provide you, when you create an Office app project, we provide you a style sheet that's going to already have some styles of Office. So you can have things like the same sort of fonts and sizes that you see in a typical Office product. One of the other things that's really important is the use of scroll bars. So content apps, which again are kind of something that lives within your Excel document, you should never use scroll bars on those. Otherwise, again, it's just going to look like an iframe. It's not going to look right. For the other types of apps, the task pane apps and the mail apps, it's okay to have vertical scroll bars, but you want to avoid horizontal scroll bars at all costs. So because of the scroll bar considerations, we want you to always, you know, keep in mind the concept of resizing. You know, as you're going and developing these apps, resize it and make sure that it's you know, doing the right things for you. Also consider things like informational messages. We're going to block things like an alert, so you can't just do a JavaScript alert to pop up a window and give a message to your user. So you need maybe some sort of messaging div to be able to put those things in. In terms of menuing, there is a context menu that we'll show you in the top right corner of all the apps that you do have the ability, well, at least the document-centric apps, you have a context menu that you can hook into and do things. Also consider touch in your designs. Nowadays, you know, everyone has, you know, touch devices, it feels like. And if I were to create something like hover out menus, those are the most frustrating thing for me when I'm on a mobile, something that's touch, because there is no mouse to hover. It's just your finger when you're touching the screen. And so keep that in mind as you design elements. Make sure that you, you know, design around those types of things so that it's going to work consistently.
All right, so how do I get started, right? What do I need to do to actually build my apps? And where do I go? The best place to go right now, dev.office.com. On dev.office.com, what you're seeing here, next thing is flip over, dev.office.com, what you're going to have is, that's our place for building apps for Office. We have another talk tomorrow, and Richard has another talk on Friday, where we're going to talk about SharePoint apps, and then kind of going deeper into building kind of these interactive applications that are spread across Office, SharePoint, and cloud-based apps. So here's your one-stop shop for all of that. What you'll get is a big button that says start and sign up for building your apps. What you'll get the ability to do is sign up for what's called a developer tenant. When you get your developer tenant, what you'll do is you'll have access to Exchange, Outlook, you'll have access to Office web applications, you'll also have access to SharePoint, and you'll have access to all of these things that you'll need to actually build your Office applications. I've already provisioned one of these. We'll also talk about the development tools in a second. I've already provisioned one of these. In this case here, this is my developer tenant, and you'll notice across the top, this looks just like Office 365, except it's limited. It's the provisioned for a developer. It's provisioned for myself, so I have access to the developer tools. One of the tools that comes with building the Office apps is this tool called Napa. Napa is a web-based tool that allows us to build apps, and it's actually deployed as an app for building apps.
So it's an app for building apps.
It's an app for building apps deployed as an app. All right, so what we can do here is add new project. This is a very simple way to do it. What you'll notice here is when I go to add a new project, there's different things I can build. I can build an app for SharePoint. I can build a content app for Excel, a task pane app for Office, or a mail app for Office. In this case, what I'll do is I'll just build a task pane app for Office. We'll go ahead and use task pane app 2. Click OK. And here what you're going to notice is initially, right, this is just HTML. The start page that Richard talked about, we'll show you where it lives in the manifest file and what gets deployed. Right now, it's just HTML. In this case here, we're going to add some home screen content. We're going to add some additional information. We also have a file, a JavaScript file, that kind of runs my my user interface and runs the code. And we'll show you some examples of this as well. But here, what's interesting about Napa is I have a good I have IntelliSense, right? I have IntelliSense in the browser. If I am using this on a Mac, right, if I wanted to build this on a Mac, make sure you use Chrome or Firefox on the Mac if you want to go ahead and try this out. But here I have full IntelliSense. I also have things like syntax checking. All right, so it's going to tell me what that function returns. You can see that there. I can do things like, where is this thing used? Right, so I can find references. And it's pretty slick, right? I've got a pretty good JavaScript interface, very lightweight, but it's in the browser. I haven't had to launch anything yet. But we're developers in the room, so a lot of us probably have Visual Studio. One thing I can do is there's a little button over here. Live zoom that. There's a little button over here that lets me open in Visual Studio. The interesting thing about Napa is I can get started on the application, build kind of my hello world, build my framework, push the button, open it into Visual Studio, and actually get kind of a richer IDE environment. The other thing I can do with Napa, let's do here, is close the browser. All right, so let's go into Visual Studio. Let me go into Visual Studio.
So really quickly, Israel, so we mentioned that all of these apps need a web server.
That's correct.
So when I'm using Napa, what's my web server when I build one of these apps?
So for Napa, that's a good question. For Napa, my web server is going to be SharePoint, that developer tenant that you had deployed with your developer tenant. That's the one that you're going to use for your web server. But can I use any web server? I mean, do I have to use SharePoint? No, I can use any web server. So Richard mentioned that it's open to PHP developers. It's open to Ruby on Rails if you happen to have an external service. We'll actually show you what that call is. You host your developer kind of user interface inside of Office and use your external services and go ahead and pull those in. And again, we'll show you an example of that as well.
Another thing I think that's interesting for the IT pros in the audience is in the past, to do SharePoint development, you kind of had to give the developer this monster of a box. In fact, if you look at my colleague here, he's got a pretty gigantic laptop of his own. But nowadays, we're moving to where all I need is one of these tenants, which is just a site collection. And so I think it really opens the door for doing development and being able to support a developer community without having to give someone a whole VM or a big laptop.
Absolutely. So here what we're doing is we're going to take a quick tour of the manifest. So what I did was I just created a simple application. It's a simple Hello World app. So in order to create that, we say File, New, and then App for Office, right? It's very similar interface to what you'll see in the Napa tool set. Once I provision my App for Office, what I'll get is a very similar framework. I have a home.html. I have some code commented out, but I'll show you that in a second of what that is. I have some JavaScript files here. I have a function here called putData, and we'll talk about that one in a second. But here what we're doing is when we go back to what people do with these Office add-ins, two things that they mostly do. They read from a document and they write to a document. So the Hello World app that comes right out of the box comes with the ability to go ahead and read from a document. So let's see what that looks like. I'll go ahead and hit F5. And what I get is a task pane app from Word. And I'll go ahead and type some content in here. Hello from Word. Highlight that for the folks in the back. Right, and here I've got a button here called Get Data from Selection, and you'll notice here that I just interacted with that document, and I went ahead and got some data from a document. You say to yourself, well, that's great, Israel. We really appreciate that. But how do I actually set content? Let's take a look. First thing we're going to do is we're going to create a place for getting data from the user. So here what I've done is I've just created a very simple text box, a very simple button. And with that button, I just wired it up to a function, called it setData. In my home.js, this is just regular jQuery. Just regular jQuery. What I did was I went ahead and found that element, putData, added a click handler to it, called it putData. And in the putData function, here all I'm doing is I'm grabbing that information, whatever's in the text box, and then taking that and setting it back to the document. So let's see what that looks like when we actually run it. Here's my Word document. Again, hello from Word. Go ahead and make that a little bit bigger for the folks in the back. And let's just make sure we didn't break it. So we'll go ahead and get data from selection, right? So there we have some selection. Gentleman in the front, your name, sir? Guy that just walked in? Nathan. Hello, Nathan. We'll go ahead and set that data. Oh, look at that. There's a breakpoint. Wow, I'm breaking into JavaScript, which is pretty cool. Here, I want to make sure I've got my variable. We'll F5 through that. And hello, Nathan. Right. So here I'm setting, and I can get data from the content. I'm getting content and actually interacting with this document back and forth. Let's see what it looks like when we call a service. Go back. Here, and here what I've done is created this quick application, and we'll break into this. Quick application, all it does is call an external service, and it creates rhymes, right? We just wanted to find something. So one thing that's, since we were here, the rain in Spain, because I'm a poet, is mostly on the grain. Everyone knows that's not correct. Through that. Go back here, we'll make this a little bit bigger. Give me one sec. Make this bigger. So here I've got the word, I'm gonna highlight that word. And here what we're doing is we're just gonna call an external service. So in my case here, I'm gonna get the data that I actually highlighted from the user. We'll spin through here, we'll just call some jQuery, call some external data. Once we grab that external data, we will get external data. Make sure that we're not on a breakpoint. There we go. So now we have some rhyme data. Pull that back, and again, it's just regular old jQuery and HTML. So here what I've done is I've called that external service. With that external service, all it does is grab words and pull information back. We'll go back here and we'll find our word. The rain in Spain is mostly on the
train?
No one knows that. Am I the only one that knows that line? Okay, so I'll just replace that with plane. Actually, that didn't go over as well as I expected. Back to Richard. No poets in the audience.
So here's some of the APIs that you saw Israel using. So this is kind of one of the core things we think about when we do these document-centric apps is input and output. So you notice that all of these have their async methods. So I can call get selected data async, set selected data async. I can add a handler, and then I can wire into things like selection change. So actually, the app that you just saw where he did rhyming, the reason it was a little bit confusing is he was actually doing a selection to resize his font, but it was actually calling his event handler. To go off and call that service, and because he had that breakpoint there. Yeah. But that was the value of that, is that every time a selection was made, I can automatically go bring up something that's contextual to that. And then this talks about some of the data types for reading and writing with documents. So some of the ones that are probably the most familiar are going to be text, matrix, and table. So the difference between a matrix and a table, a matrix is going to be a set number of columns and rows, whereas a table can be variable. A table would be the type of thing when you go into Excel and say, I want to insert a table, but the same sort of thing is available in things like Word. There are two specific Word data types. So there is an HTML data type, and there's an OpenOffice XML. So for any of the old school Office developers, hopefully you've maybe seen OpenXML before, and you can still use that here. There's actually some really good examples in the store. I don't know if anyone's familiar with, like, Avery. Avery does like the little different like mailing labels and different types of templates. Well, in the past, I would have to go install a template. Well, now with their app, I can just go find my sheet ID, I guess, that comes with it, and it'll go pull the entire template into the document because it uses that OpenXML data type. So once we talk about reading and writing from documents, that's great, but it's only interactive when I'm actually selecting text. Well, what if my app needs to have a richer integration into the application? And so that's where we get into things like bindings. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about bindings. The idea behind a binding is, regardless of what's selected, we can lock into a specific area of your document, or maybe multiple areas. So here are some of the different functions that I have for adding a binding. So I can add from prompt. So what that is if I can actually give a little pop-up window and it can say, hey, select what you want your binding to be. I can add from selection, so similar to what Israel had selected, or I can add from a named item. So if I have like a table that's named table one, I can just enter in table one and have a binding to that. I then can reference my bindings. I can get all of my bindings. I can get a binding by a specific ID. So when you set a binding, you give it a binding ID, so I can go get it based upon that. Or I can do an office.select. I can also remove bindings by ID, and then I can add a handler to these. So I can do things like when my binding changes. So the data that I'm binding to, maybe I add a new row to a table and I want to lock into that. I can get an event based upon that. So the different types of bindings I can do are with text, matrix, and table. So it's similar to the data types that we saw for me doing selections, but we've kind of omitted some of those more advanced ones like HTML and OpenXML. So let's take a look at an example of bindings. So I'm going to do this, kind of continue with my storyline of doing finding some sangria for my boss. And I built another little quick app here that's going to be similar to Urban Spoon. Anyone seen Urban Spoon before? It's a phone app that allows you to kind of randomly select a restaurant. Well, I decided I'd build it for Excel. So I have that long list of restaurants that I found in the Madrid area. I have some ratings, but it really doesn't help me a whole lot. So what I want to do is maybe randomly find one. So I'll go ahead and launch this here really quickly. So here you can see my little form. It's asking me to bind. At this point, I don't have any data, so I'm going to use that restaurant search again. So let me go ahead and insert my restaurant search, and we'll look again for sangria. So let's go out and search. There's our restaurants, and we'll go ahead and insert our data in here. And now I'm ready to bind this. There's two ways that I could bind this. I didn't provide the bind by prompt. I just did bind by selection or bind by named item. You could see I have a named item here. It's called table one. You can see it up there in the top left. Or I could just bind to a specific column if I wanted to. So what I'm going to do is bind to this name column. So I'm going to go ahead and bind to selection. And you can see what it did is it loaded all of those different restaurants in kind of a wheel. This is just HTML content. So if I were to go here and say view source, you'll see that it's basically just HTML content. And actually, most of it's being done in my script file at this point. But if I click on it, you can see that it's very interactive. It goes and spins, and it goes and selects a restaurant for me, and I can just have fun spinning this all day long. Or because I've actually wired into my data at this point, I could add new items on the fly. So I'll add maybe Richard's restaurant. And behind the scenes, it actually updated this wheel. So if I spin it again, I don't know if we'll land on Richard's restaurant. Let me try it one more time, see if we can actually see it in here. I saw it go by there. But ultimately, this is live. And what's cool is if I save this and I went now and sent it to Israel, he would be able to open it up. And because the content apps actually live inside of Excel, he would get this app. It would automatically go over there. The other cool thing is if I were to save this, let me save this to my desktop here really quickly. I think this is a pretty cool thing as well. So I'll just save this to my desktop and I'll call this Urban Sample. I'm going to stop debugging my app. I'm going to close it and reopen it. Where is it? Let's look at my desktop. And what I call it, Urban Sample. So when you save the document, it actually takes a PNG image of what that app looks like when you save it. This is really cool because if I actually went and gave this to someone that didn't have the latest version of Office, it actually would just pull it up as an image. So they still would get some of the value of these new apps. The other really cool thing is I can take this exact worksheet, I can go put it inside of SharePoint. So I did this ahead of time. I went and put it in just a quick wiki page inside of SharePoint. And what you'll see is this happens to be some restaurants in New Orleans, but I have my app and it all works in a browser. Again, this is just web content So it works both in my client and in my browser. So pretty rich integration between those two. So let me show you some of the main things that are going on in this app. This app actually has two pages, and this is, if you go create a content app in Excel, it's going to default to two pages. One is the actual app, and then one is a page just to help out with bindings. And I, since that's kind of the out-of-the-box, the Hello World example we give you, I decided to follow with that same pattern in my app is here. So I actually started with kind of the Hello World content app and just augmented it the way I wanted to. So what happens is this function gets called when my app is loaded. It's going to go and try to find a binding. So if it has a binding, it'll go do some things with that binding. But if it doesn't, what you'll notice there at the bottom is it's going to redirect me to the data binding page. So it's going to go say, hey, you don't have a binding. You need a binding in order for this to work. The binding page is going to allow me to go and add a binding. There's really just two quick things here. It's either add from select, from selection, or add from named item. And they basically do the same thing. It's going to go and lock into that area that I've either selected or that named item. And then it redirects me back to the home because now I have that binding that I can use and do things with. So within the app, once I have that binding, I can do things like wire into the binding data changed event. So remember, I want to know anytime my data changes that I'm bound to, and that's exactly what I'm doing here. So once that data changes, I can go do something with it. This will also fire the first time I create the binding because it's kind of a brand new thing. So really simple to do these things. There's just a few of the different APIs that you need to do in order to lock into this. And then the rest is just typical jQuery, JavaScript development. Cool.
All right, mail apps. Before we jump into mail apps, just a quick temperature check. How's everyone doing? Any questions so far? Questions? No questions. All right, question in the back. Yes, sir. So the question is, are the content apps, are there plans to put content apps not just in Excel, but also in Word, on PowerPoint, some of the other ones? Is that your question?
Okay. To work in like Office web applications.
Yep.
I know that, I mean, it would be pure speculation at this point, but I can tell you that we're really all in on this app model, and so we're continuing to look at enhancements like that. And my guess is that would be a pretty easy one to be able to bring forward, like the task pane apps into Word. The one thing that we feel is pretty important is that the reason the task pane apps, it's something that supports the document. It's really not a part of the document. And so I could see those coming over time into the Office web applications for Word and maybe PowerPoint. But at this point, I think the bigger question is, will content apps come to like Word and PowerPoint, things like that? So I think we'll see that in the future. I don't know, when that would be, though.
All right. Any other questions on the app model? All right, so mail apps. Mail apps do require Exchange 2013. When you do deploy your developer tenant, or if you are in the cloud, you do get access to Exchange 2013. Exchange 2013 will host the user's mailbox. It'll also host the administration and where that manifest goes. That's where it gets deployed to where end users actually are able to look at the application and run the application. Behind the scenes, there's a few APIs that are able to be exposed through the object model, but once you're in Exchange, you can also call Exchange Web Services. And with those Exchange Web Services, it allows you to do things like add items to a calendar, allows you to interact with the user mailbox with additional interfaces and additional functionality that you don't get through an Office app. And that's kind of on purpose, right? You don't want people to just automatically call into those things. There's still a permission model behind those, and that still is kept track of from the administrative interface. But it is possible. It is something that you're able to do. When you're in, when you have a mail application, there's this thing called application activation rules. And the activation rules fire in Exchange. And what they do is they allow the application that's registering themselves, they allow them to register something to look for. Hey, Exchange, look for these things. So Richard showed Bing Map. Richard also showed a suggested meetings. Question we always get around mail applications is, Is your application looking at my inbox? Is it looking at my item that I'm setting on all the time? Is it able to read my data? And the simple answer to that is no. It's not able to see it. All that's happening behind the scenes is your application registers an activation rule. Exchange goes and runs those activation rules and tells your application whether it's available, tells that thing in the app bar whether it's available to be shown or not shown. And I'll show you an example of those activation rules in a second. Once the user then goes ahead and clicks on that, that's when your application fires. And we'll see that in a demo here in a little bit. So the big note there is that activation rules only make the app available to the user, doesn't actually run until the user interacts with it. So that's something that you should be aware of. The other thing that's important is that within Exchange and within the model, there's this thing called known types, known entities. We have addresses that are a known entity. What Exchange will do is it'll look at your mail item, and you'll be able to take a look and say, oh, there's an address here. This looks like an address. Let me go ahead and fire an address, all the address activation rules. The other thing you can add into it are regular expressions, and I'll show you an example of that. Go ahead and dig into this person's item that they're on and go figure out whether you want to activate for a particular thing. So in the example that I'm going to show you, it's a vehicle identification number. It's looking for specific patterns in different areas.
And this is where I think that almost any organization can benefit from a mail app, because every organization has maybe like specific kind of patterns that they might use every day. So actually, me and a colleague, we built a pretty extensive help desk app. And everyone deals with help desk tickets, right? And help desk tickets typically have some sort of number associated with them. Well, if I identify that pattern, I can go and maybe pull up the status of the ticket, maybe allow me to close the ticket, do updates on it. And so that's really the value. I think anyone, maybe, you know, purchase order numbers, procurement type of things, annual review number, some sort of code, all of those things can be leveraged to give someone a one-place experience to work with your enterprise data.
That's a great point. And then these rules can also be anded and ored within the actual activation interface. So let's go ahead and take a look at that, see what that looks like. So we'll flip over here. I have a mail application. In my case, it's the VinFinder application. And what I've done is I've told when I build my application, I've told Exchange, hey, when these things fire, when these things happen, I want you to look at the current mail item, and I want you to investigate for these things. In my case here, I'm going to investigate three things. I'm going to look for a VIN number in the body as plain text if someone sends me a plain text email. I'm also going to look inside the body for HTML, and I'm going to look for a regular expression. And the regular expression is a VIN format. So a vehicle identification number has a specific format. What I've done is just built a regular expression around that.
So this might be useful for like someone that's in a car business, or you know, buys and sells cars, or maybe,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Here is my vehicle information finder. In my case here, it's just HTML. All I'm doing is I've created an activation rule, told Exchange, hey, I want you to look at these things, activate on these particular things if you find this type of pattern in the mail item, and then I want you to just go ahead and make a call out to an external service, bring some information back about that particular VIN. So let's go ahead and launch that and see what that looks like. What you're going to see when the interface fires up, it is going to prompt me from my mailbox, and I'll go ahead and enter my password. Please don't take pictures. All right, so it's going to go ahead and log me in. So I'm going to put in my credentials for my tenant. And here it's launching. All right. There we go. So it's launching my inbox. And here the VinFinder, again, what we've said is, hey, when you see this pattern, I want you to light up and show a little bar. So in this case here, you look up above, it's a Mercedes-Benz, and it has a VIN number. The regular expression didn't fire because that VIN number isn't a pattern that I'm looking for. So I'll go back over here, and I'll look for car parts here. Oh, you notice right there, my VinFinder application now showed up, because what it did was it found a VIN within the body. So we'll see what the VinFinder actually comes back with for this particular thing. I do have a breakpoint, so you'll notice that the breakpoints aren't being hit yet. They will get hit when I actually click the button. Now I'm going in, and it's identifying, it's looking at my mail item. And here we'll just look at some quick things of what I'm looking for. Office.context is kind of your API view into the world of the pretty much anything, any of these Office apps, right? Office.context is going to give you whatever it is you're working on, whether it's a Word document, PowerPoint. In this case here, it's a mailbox. So I'm going to say office.context mailbox.item, which is going to give me access to the current item that the user is sitting on. Get regex matches, and I'm going to pass it the type of regex that I'm looking for. This is going to return an array of matches. So this is an example. If I have multiple IDs or multiple identifiers, I get multiple hits. Those things come back in an array, and I can actually do something with that data. In my case here, all I'm doing is I'm searching for that particular thing, and what I've done is I've found it in the subject. So I go through and find it in the subject. We'll just highlight that quickly. So we'll be able to see, right, there's my VIN that it found. And down here, all it's doing is it's calling an external service. It's calling the admin service. I'm going at it through a proxy to go get access to that data. We'll go ahead and F5 through that. So it's going and getting some external data. Now it's found some data. That data then comes back. So we'll see that here. It's in this property called style holder. So all I'm doing here is digging into the style holder data. All right, pulling that information back, and then we'll go back to our mail application. F5. And there, what we've done is that particular thing came back with some information about that particular VIN. All right, so here, what we're doing is just showing an interaction. We showed an activation rule. You can actually plug in regular expressions. Based on those regular expression rules, you can activate something in the bar. When you go ahead and click on that, you interact with that, call an external service, get information back. It could be doing anything. You could be calling an external service that's running on-prem. Could be calling an external service that's running in the cloud. Could be a completely different external service, like the Rhyme service that I was using, which is a third-party service that's out there. As long as it's returning data back, whether it's in JSON format or XML format, you can actually pull that information back and do something with that data. And that's a quick tour of a mail app.
Awesome. So what I wanted to do next was kind of take this to the next level. Jump over here. So what I wanted to do is maybe combine these apps with a SharePoint app. So we told you that SharePoint might play the role of the web server for some of these Office applications. You need a web server of some sort, whether it's IIS Express, whether it's Real IIS, whether it's Windows Azure. You need some web server to host this web content. What I want to do is maybe take it and do kind of a further level of integration with SharePoint. So I'm going to show you a really cool example. This has a number of steps. This is really well documented on my blog. But I want to show you how we can combine these in a really powerful way. So what I'm going to do is let me jump over to Visual Studio. And I'm going to create an integrated Office and SharePoint demonstration here. So I'm going to go in quick new project. Instead of doing an app for Office, I'm going to actually add an app for SharePoint. I'll kind of explain this here in a moment. One of the things that you see here, I think this is an interesting thing to point out, is in the old days of building Office apps, you know, now I have one option, and this basically is my one selection fits all. In the old days, look, if I wanted to do an old type of add-in, there were tons of different types of templates that I had to deal with here. We've truly made it simple where I just create an app for Office. In this case, I want SharePoint to kind of be the central hub for this app. And so I'm going to actually start with a SharePoint app here. And I'm going to call this Expense Reporting. So I'm going to go ahead and say OK on this. And what it's going to do, it's going to ask me about hosting. And I'm not going to get into the details of this. There is a really great session tomorrow that Israel and another colleague of mine, Nathan, is going to lead on. It's going to be a 0 to 60 specific to SharePoint apps. But what I will say is what I'm going to do here is I'm going to pick something called SharePoint Hosted. And this is kind of the simplest type of SharePoint app. So we're just going to go with the simple type, and I'm going to say finish. Now, similar to a app for Office, an app for SharePoint always has a web page that's kind of the entry point. And so, actually, first it's going to ask me for my tenant. So when it goes off and creates this project, what you're going to see is I'm going to have basically an empty SharePoint project. Now, it gave me a default page, but I'm going to actually delete this. I don't need this at all. We're going to delete this completely. So I'm going to go and delete all of my pages, in fact, because we're going to really make a library the central way that this app interacts. So the next thing I want to do is I want to add my Office app to my SharePoint app. So I'm going to go over here and say I want to add a new item. And you'll see all the different types of things that I can add to my SharePoint app. But one of the elements that's here is I can add an app for Office. So I can add an app for Office in an app for SharePoint. So the scenario here is maybe I want to keep track of expense sheets. And I want someone to go to a library and launch a new Word document that already has our app built into it. So it automatically is there. It interacts with our Word document. And they can save it to a document library. So that's exactly what I'm going to do here. So I'm going to go ahead and call this my expense report. When I do this, it's going to add a number of different things. The first thing it's going to say is what type of app. I'm going to make this really simple. I'm going to say I want it to be a task pane app for Word. If I click next, the interesting thing it's going to allow me to do is maybe pick an existing Word document. So if I had already a really nice like expense sheet template built, I could go and pick this here, and it would upload it and make that the Word document. The default here is that I'm going to get just an empty Word document. So I'll go ahead and say finish here. We'll just do the quick and dirty one. So now it's going to create HTML content for our Office app. And this is going to be useful for us, but we're not going to really change much here. I just want to show you how we can integrate these two different types of things. So you can see here, it also added a number of different scripts and things like that into my project that are going to host the web content of this Office app. So I'll close all these items. And we have one more thing we need to do, which is add a library. So I'm going to come out here again and say add new item. And I'm going to add a library that I'm going to call expenses. It's going to ask me what type of list I want. So in this case, I want it to be a document library. You can see I have a few different options here that I can go with. So I could pick an announcements list, calendar, but really what I want is that document library. One really important thing, if you want to try this, don't just click finish. If you click finish, you're going to cause yourself a world of problems, because what I want to do is I want to associate our expense report Word document with this document library. So when people go and use the document library, they automatically get our Word document that has the app built into it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to click next. Very important. Don't click finish. Here's where I can go do it. I can go and specify the template. And when I added that Office app to my SharePoint app, it went ahead and created a Word document. So I can find it right inside this Office Documents folder. So here's our expense sheet or expense report. I'll go ahead and click that, and now I can finish. At this point, it's going to go add a number of things to our SharePoint project. It's going to add a library so that when I deploy this, it automatically creates that library. And it's also going to do things like create a content type. Behind the scenes, I won't get into the specifics of this, but it creates a content type for expense reporting. The only thing that I really needed to do here is, one is I can give it a little bit of a more friendly name. So I can go into, actually, I want to go into the schema. And here, you can see that I have my content type. For those that are familiar with SharePoint, you're probably seeing these all the time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to call this expense report, just to give it a more friendly name. And I can give it a little bit more of a friendly description. So I'll say, maybe create an expense report. All right, the last thing, remember, the only thing that's going to get installed in all of this app model is a manifest file. Basically, I need a manifest file to tell the app where it needs to start. And so to look at that, I can go into my app manifest. So here I have a manifest, and you can see it has really clearly, it says what the start page is of our app. Now, you notice that it says pages/default ASPX. Well, I deleted that. I deleted that page altogether. I want it to start in our library. So that's what I want to do here is I want to change the start page to be the library that we just created. So the way I can do that is I can come over here to our expenses list. And there's a instance here. You can see there's an expense instance. And if I open that file, you can see my URL to that library. So I'm going to grab this, and I'm going to change our manifest to say, this is where I want to start. I don't want to start in that pages default ASPX, I want to go here. Now, you've seen me do everything in HTML so far. Again, you can pick your web technology of choice. If you're an MVC guy or a classic ASP or ASP.NET, all of those work here. It's just, you know, specifying in this manifest where I want that start page to be. So I think we have everything we need now, so I'll go ahead and press start. This is at this point going to go out and deploy this to SharePoint, because SharePoint is going to be our web host for this scenario. So what we're going to see here is it'll talk about uploading the app. It's going to go now and install it, and it's going to give me some progress along the way. This usually takes about 10 to 15 minutes. I'm actually deploying this all the way in a tenant in North America, and it still occurs pretty quickly. I did have a European one, but this seemed to be plenty fast for the purposes of a demonstration.
So while this is going, any questions so far? Yes, sir. So the question is, the content type that we're creating here, can this content type be reused somewhere else within my SharePoint tenant?
That's a great question. I'll give you a quick answer, and then I would really encourage you to go to the session that Nathan and Israel have. But what happens is, we're really about trying to create this model in an isolated fashion, so both in Office apps and the SharePoint app. So what happened behind the scenes when we create a SharePoint app is there's a special site that gets created, an isolated website, and that content type can be reused within that site, but not other places. So it's not, it is reusable, but maybe not to the extent that you want it to be.
Can it be published to a content type hub?
Can it be published to a content type hub? There is ways of doing that. So again, I would hold off on getting deep in this because there's a dedicated session to it. There's ways that I can do like event receivers and things to do exactly what you're talking about. And so hopefully they'll cover that tomorrow. So here's the end result, is I have a library. It took me into my library when I went into the app. In fact, if I go back to this is what we call the host site. If I click on my expense reporting, what it does is takes me directly to the start page, which is my library. But the cool thing is, if I go now and say files, new expense report, here's our content type. If I click on that, what it's going to do, it's going to launch our expense report document template that is going to have our Office app preloaded. So now I didn't create any special Office app here. This is the plain old Hello World. But now I could do things like, you know, Hello from Word, select it, say get data, and it's able to read that. So hopefully you can see the power that I can do with something like this. If I had a really nice expense sheet or a purchase order or something like that, I could use my app to pull in line of business data maybe from SAP or some other system and be able to interact with a Word document and put something together. So this combined, when you combine them, I think there's some really powerful things that you can do.
Yep, and then some other things that you can do is you can actually make some money. Who likes making money? Everybody's hand should be raised because they should like making money. There's a lot of folks that are making money deploying apps to the store. And whether you're doing it through the Windows Store or even Apple devices, there's another marketplace that's the Office Store. There's also a SharePoint Store where you could actually upload your apps after you build them and deploy them and actually make some money off them by selling them. We'll flip over to deployment real quick. I'll show you how these things get deployed, and I'll wrap back up to the slide. There's a few places that you'll see when we actually get these apps and we want to deploy them across our enterprise, there's a few places that we can do that, whether they're custom-built apps or apps that we purchase from the store. In my case here, what I'm going to do is I'm looking at my Exchange tenant, and here I can add apps for all my users within my organization. So I can add from the Office Store, I can add from a URL that points to the manifest file that Richard talked about. I can also add from a file if I had a local manifest file. And since it's just a start page, all I'm doing is uploading that manifest file to Exchange. When that app actually runs, it runs over to that start page and does something there. If I click on this and go add from Office Store, where I'm going to go is the Outlook Store. But once I'm in the Office Store, you'll see that there's a lot of apps already out there. And those apps, you can click on them and pull them down into your organization, deploy them to your organization. So as an IT pro, If you're managing one of these tenants, you can download these apps. If you're on-prem, you could also download these apps and install them in your local catalog for your on-prem instance. The other thing you can do is within the individual mailbox, let's go back here. So here I'll go to my Outlook mailbox. As an end user, I can also deploy my own applications. So I go here, there's a Manage Apps tab, and here within my Manage App tabs, Manage App tab, I can go ahead, I see a very similar user interface where I can add apps. I can also go to the Outlook Office Store, and I can add apps to my, add mail apps to my inbox. If I'm in Exchange, on the Insert tab, I'm sorry, in Excel, on my Insert tab, I actually get access to the apps as well. I can add apps within the context here. In this case, I'm going to go see all. And here, I can actually browse and download one of these apps. Now, in the past, when these apps were available in the store, or somebody gave them to you, well, there was no store. You got, what you did was you got a binary, you got a DLL, you got an install package that you ran on your machine. Here, I can go ahead and pull these down. These apps, very thin install. It's just a pointer to a manifest. But there's very light footprint on the client. So I can pull these apps down from the store and not worry about them doing anything harsh to my system as an end user.
Another thing I'll point out there is, is the dialogue that Israel just had up. You saw that there was My Apps, featured apps from the store. One of the other options we can have here is we can have one that says from my organization. So again, where you saw on the Exchange side, I have from an IT pro, I can kind of push to the organization the apps that I want. I have the same ability here, and then the user has their ability to kind of pick their own ones.
They can go to the Office Store. So in this case here, we're showing PowerPoint, right? Same interface, same place, go to the Insert tab, apps, go to the Office Store, click there, I go to the store. And once I'm out there on the store, I can download these apps. But as an end user, I can download them. As a developer, you can go ahead and publish these. There's a thing called a marketplace. When you build your application and get it ready for deployment, you go ahead and publish it to the marketplace. You figure out how you want to get paid, whether it's through PayPal or if you're doing it free. You can do accept credit cards. Once you get it up there and get your app published, it'll show up in this marketplace, and people can download it and actually add it and use it, and you make money from it. Right, so it's pretty good. It's a pretty good way to make some quick money. If you're not trying to make money, you're just interested in getting apps out there, for example, this Avery application, you can also just get them. It's a great marketing tool. It's another way to differentiate yourself. If you're in a services business or if you're building applications for customers, this is a great place to market yourself. Build yourself a couple apps, get them out there into the store. Hey, Mr. Customer, download my app that, in my case, you know, does VIN finding. We'll go back. Yep, we'll go back here. Deployment and catalogs. What you're doing is you're deploying your web assets anywhere. We've said that probably four or five times already. We're going to say it again. The web asset, that start page, can go anywhere. It can point to a PHP site that's hosted in a competitor hosting. Hopefully, it's hosted on Azure. You go ahead and host that on Azure in an Azure role. You can also deploy it to some of these catalogs. So I showed you the Office Store catalog, which is a place where you can try to make some money. The SharePoint app catalog, if you do want to turn that off and you don't want your end users to actually get access to pull things down from the store, let's say you don't want that in your organization, you want to have a more controlled environment. Richard mentioned there's the for your organization tab. If I did publish them to my organization, I have an app catalog that I can get access to, and it's specifically for my organization. So as I'm building my custom apps, I deploy them to my organization, and my end users can still have the ability to download apps, but they're apps that I actually build. Question over there? So the question is, can I restrict those applications to specific departments, or do I have to share them with everybody? So the good thing about deploying them to SharePoint is behind the scenes, the app catalog is a SharePoint list. So because it's a SharePoint list, I can actually put security permissions on there so that it won't even show up for those end users that don't have access. The other thing I can do is I can deploy specific apps, SharePoint apps. If, you know, for example, Richard's expense app, I could have that kind of packaged app. And behind the scenes, I could deploy it to specific site collections. So end users won't even have to go out to the store or pull them down. I can, as an IT pro, actually push them down to individual organizations.
I think even the third one on this list here is the file share, which I would call the poor man's app catalog. It's basically just a file share, and you can use group policy to let clients know that I have apps out here. That's going to still be permission-based as well. So, I mean, I think the key is wherever I put my manifest, as long as I secure that to the groups that I want to have access to it, it's going to be secure.
Yep, and the other thing, too, is because it is a start page, it's still kind of HTML, and it's still, you know, flowing through. So I can do something like put a login box or something if I needed them to maybe log in and provide some username and credentials to that application. Once I'm in the task pane, they enter the username and credentials, then I give them access to the application. The Exchange App Catalog, I showed you that. You upload the mail applications up there to the Exchange App Catalog. That's available in the cloud, Exchange 2013. That's a place where you can store your mail app manifest. All right, so what we did was we walked you through kind of the power. We took you on a very fast tour through all of it. We kind of hit the high level. We took you down in, deep down into some code. We did a little bit of debugging. We wanted to keep it light because it is kind of an introductory session, but we realize that it's a mixed audience. We've got folks that are brand new to Office apps, and we got folks that are actually developers that are very used to HTML and JavaScript, so hopefully we were able to make everybody happy. We were able to make the IT pros a little bit happy, showing them a little bit of the administrative interfaces. We did also talk about different patterns for building applications. We showed a task pane app. Richard showed a content app, and different types of apps and different for their purposes. Really, go out there, get your developer tenant, go out there to dev.office.com, start building these apps. You're going to find out how just Disney simple, to coin Richard's phrase, Disney simple this is to actually build and deploy and build applications and deploy them within your organization. There's some related content. You can come to our talk tomorrow. Myself and Nathan will be talking about building SharePoint apps. Very similar, 0 to 60. We'll breeze you through pretty much at the same depth. We'll go very high, very low, and everything in between. There's some other applications there. There's some hands-on labs, so if you want to get familiar with this content on your own, you can go to the hands-on labs and actually build them. I also encourage you, again, get your developer tenant, dev.office.com. Get your developer tenant. We will be around in the office booths. We'll also be around at the Ask the Experts, which is tomorrow. I think it's Country Drinks. Is that where we're going?
I think it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yep. So we'll be around for that. We'll also be around for some questions. Some additional resources here. Any questions before we let you guys go? Yes, sir.
Is there an F-bar in the Outlook calendar?
Say that one more time. Oh, is there an app bar in the calendar? So if I'm looking at the calendar item, that's a good question.
So not in the calendar, but you can target a calendar item. So basically in your inbox, you can see the app bar is specific to the inbox. Once I'm on the calendar, if something, there's no triggers that run, none of those rules are run, and there's no place to display that. That is kind of a neat concept, though. I see that being a powerful thing maybe in the future.
But what you could also do is, since you have access to the Exchange Web Services, you could theoretically capture all the information in your app, push that off, and use the Exchange Web Services to maybe put something in someone's calendar or something like that.
Yeah, augment it.
Yep. A question that we normally get, the last time we presented this talk, I'll get to you in one sec. The question we get is, what if I have VSTO applications? Does this mean VSTO is going away? Right? Richard?
No. They're going to still be there, right? I mean, we don't have parity between what you can do in VSTO. There's still some really powerful things. Some ISVs have created some amazing add-ins to Office. We are going to continue to invest in this app model so that we can hopefully at some point in the future get hopefully to parity to where we can replace all of those. I mean, hopefully you guys can see the value of the only thing that the client knows about is an XML file. No binaries whatsoever. All that, you know, I could have my client here and I could have my web application hosted in Singapore. It doesn't matter, right? It's just web content.
Yep.
And that's really powerful.
Question in the front? So the question is, with the dev environment for SharePoint, do I need a full dev environment? Is that the? Oh, for if I want to build Office apps, do I need a SharePoint tenant? Do I need the developer tenant? No, you just download Visual Studio, download the tools, and as long as you have a place to host it, so like for example here, you can host it locally as you're testing. You can host it on IIS. But you just need a place to host that web content.
Yep.
The easiest thing to do, though, is to the developer tenant. It's free. I think it's free for the first 90 days. If you have an MSDN subscription, it's available to you. Right? It's something that you get as part of your MSDN benefits. So it's kind of easy to get started on that. That's correct. If you're a hardcore shark, if you're a strongly typed developer, not a weakly typed JavaScript developer, then you're right. But that those tools are still available to you. You can still do that. This is just another option, kind of lightweight. Yep. All right, if there are no more questions, we'll be around for a little bit. Thank you for your time. Definitely appreciate you sticking around. Hopefully you'll get excited and deploy your developer tenants. Thank you.